the first thing I found was this like scientific journal article.
Yeah.
Titled "The Terrifying Sex Organs of Turtles." And we're not going to talk about
this here. This sounds like a Tucker Carlson bit.
Lead us off.
Okay, so you've already gotten some of this from me today, but I am losing my mind over the new podcast app on the phone after the update.
Oh my gosh, Dan. I'm so happy that you want to talk about this.
Okay, so someone in my class, my German class this morning was like, oh yeah, my phone's update. And I was like, you got an iPhone? They're like, yeah, new update. I was like, oh, okay, I need to do that. So I went home and did it because, and I was actually excited about the update because there were small little bugs like on my notifications that sort of irritate me. So one thing that Facebook app has been doing is it'll double my notifications. Like I'll get a number two whenever I really only have one notification, and I don't understand why it does that.
Yeah, the Facebook notification thing is...
it's frustrating.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah, but nonetheless, so I was thinking like, okay, update, we're going to fix some bugs. And because there's nothing major wrong with I normally am not one of those people that's always like, oh, Facebook, because if you remember back in high school, it's like, oh, Facebook did another update and it's awful. And I was always like, this is better. Like I'm generally okay, and I understand that things have to update and change, and I'm okay adapting to change whenever updates happen. But this is the first time that I've really just like gotten so angry that the podcast app specifically, which is something I used every day, has just progressively gotten worse. There was a point in time where I remember you saying, oh, the podcast app is kind of bad. And then this was like 2 years ago, and I was like, it's great. Like, it does everything I tell it to do. And then there was an update, like, of a major, like, shift in it. I mean, there's always minor updates, but I'm talking about, like, the core.
Oh, yeah.
Like, big updates.
There was a really big update with the move to iOS 11.
Yeah, and so it sort of frustrated me at first, but I've gotten used to it, even though I still think it's stupid.
It's so bad.
Yeah, and now, like...
it's unbelievable, honestly.
It has made... the main problem I had with it, which I've expressed before, is things that I could do with one press of a button, I now have to do with two to three, which seems petty, but whenever you're making like a playlist, that's obnoxious. That gets real old real quick. And there's also things where like if you're on your normal feed page where all the new stuff just comes in, you can do certain actions, but you can't do certain actions without going into the shows tab and going into the show. It's just dumb. But with this new update,
it's also very heavily reliant on Force Touch.
Yeah. Well,
which is like a totally hidden thing. And yeah, it's just really bad.
So as far as I can tell, because I've tried all the options I could think of, with the update today, one thing that I do is I will listen to podcasts like completely unsequentially out of order, multiple podcasts. So I'll create like a quick list, basically. Yeah. Like a quick playlist that's just for today. I'll get through as much of it as I can while I'm working. And then at some point during the night, I'll switch over to an audiobook and I won't get through all of my playlists. And the next day, it'll be something completely different that I've arranged, maybe some of the same episodes. I'm just scatterbrained like that, and that's what I do.
Right.
And so this made me so mad. Because without getting too technical, like from what I can tell,
please get technical.
If you press on an episode now, like you just touch it in the feed, it just starts playing it.
Mm.
There is no, it opens up the episode. So, and furthermore, you know how there's the dot, dot, dot next to options, like the continued, you know, options for more options. So now whenever I create a playlist, the only way to add, you can only do the like play next option by hitting the more options if that episode is queued up, which means like, let's say I was listening to podcast A and got halfway through episode one. And then I got distracted, started listening to podcast B, which is a whole separate podcast that different people do it. And I started listening to an episode and I was like, you know what? I'm going to skip episode one on that previous podcast I was listening to and just go to two. there is no option to add two to play next. If I tap on two, it'll just start playing that episode and it'll break the entire list. And the only way to get it to an option to where I can hit put play this next after the podcast I'm currently listening to is by pressing it so that it starts playing, so it's queued up in that original podcast, then going back to the other podcast I was listening to, hitting play on it again, then going back to that previous podcast, and then hitting play next. Which, the fact that you just got bored and glazed over trying to figure out what I was just explaining is part of the problem. Like, that's the thing is, it's like you can't even accurately and succinctly explain to people what the problem is without them just going, I have no idea what you just said. And that's what's frustrating about it. So all of that to say, podcasting is awful. I downloaded Overcast and I'm working on transferring over to that. Oh. So
yes, this is what every one of you listeners should do out there that owns an iOS device. You should open up the Apple Podcast app. You should search Eitan FM. Find the green water tower, give us a nice review, you know, and then close that and download Overcast and never open that podcast app again. That's what you should do.
Yeah, I called him out on Twitter.
I saw that. You called part of one Apple department mom and the other one dad. What was that?
Yeah,
I was a little confused.
I originally tweeted at the podcast like page, but I knew they weren't going to respond back to me because I looked at their like tweets that they put out and it's all just ads, so it's not like a response thing. Right. And so then I tagged and said, let's go ahead and get mom and dad in here too. And I put in parentheses after dad Apple, and I put after parentheses and mom, I put Apple support.
Very nice. I bet that was highly effective, and I bet the gears are now in motion for them to correct all of your podcast app woes.
Well, I got a response just from a random person. No, not from Apple.
Oh, okay.
Just from a random person that was like, yeah, this thing sucks. I have some of the same problems you're having.
Yeah, so. I definitely, as I've said many times on the show before, probably definitely recommend Overcast and or Pocket Cast. That's another good one to try out, although I think that one costs money.
I've heard of that.
But Overcast is phenomenal. Have you tried it yet?
Yeah, I started using it today at work, and it's not bad. It's actually pretty simplistic and straightforward, so it'll solve the problem. The only issue that I have is there's a couple podcasts that I've wanted to use before that haven't gotten the okay from iTunes, and they're on like big podcast hosting apps. And it's frustrating because some of the ones I was like, well, maybe the ones I'm looking for are on Overcast, and they're not. So,
well, so here's the thing. Like, you can get any podcast feed in Overcast for sure because you can subscribe directly to the RSS feed.
Ooh, I'm going to do that then.
So if you go to any podcast website, including ours, you should see a RSS link somewhere or it'll say XML.
Yeah.
And if you click on that, and then copy that link that, you know, that takes you to, you can go to, I'm going to open up the Overcast app real quick to make sure I get this right. If you go to that add button on the top right of Overcast, there's a button on the top right that says add URL.
Yeah.
And you can just paste the URL directly in there.
Okay. I'm glad we had this conversation then, because, I definitely need to do that, 'cause there's two podcasts specifically that I've been kind of wanting to listen to before, but the apps that they were on were sort of frustrating. And so I was like, right. I just kind of gave up on them. And,
yeah, as long as they have an RSS feed, which almost any podcast will,
right.
You should be able to do that. And that's also like, if you ever have one of those, patron supported RSS feeds, not on Patreon, but like a separate one where you have to have a password, you can do that too. I think one of the more recent updates, the Overcast added support for that. So,
yeah, I've always wondered. I mean, I know we do it, but you typically handle this end of the stuff. But there's some podcasts that are much bigger that, you know, they do like perks where a lot of times the perks are an extra episode and they say it just shows up in your feed. And I've never understood how that works. Like,
yeah. So for ours, at least, the Patreon app. Has a player inside of it, but there's also, you can turn it off, but we have ours turned on. You can get a link that you can then subscribe to it directly, like I was just talking about, in any player.
Okay, that makes sense then.
So like I have our bonus feed I'm subscribed to it through Overcast.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But the other thing with Overcast that you should definitely use is that smart speed. Have you tried that yet?
No. What's that?
So it takes like silences in between words, which like heavily edit our show. I say we. I heavily edit our show. So I take out a lot of the silences.
No, we do. We do.
Yeah. Both of us. yeah. You're usually sitting with me.
Not even once.
But like a lot of shows, not a lot, but there are some shows I listen to that aren't. Actually, there are some shows that I've tried to listen to and never could.
Yeah.
Until I switched to iOS and I tried Overcast. And once I found that feature, it like opened the door to less well-produced podcasts for me because I can like shrink down all the sort of awkward long pauses.
Yeah.
But it does it in a really like smart way where if it's a really long pause, it'll cut it like a lot, but not completely. So you still hear that there's a pause, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where when I listen to an audiobook, it drives me crazy that I can't run it on my audiobooks the way I do on my podcast now that I'm used to it. So I would definitely try it.
The only thing that annoys me about there has to be a technological or psychological reason to why this doesn't exist. Like, I'm sure there's like a YouTube video out there by someone smart who's explained it before. I don't understand why there is no fast speed between 1.5 and 2.
There is.
There is not a 1.75 on Audible. I mean, I'm talking more specifically of the reading apps. Yeah. Because it just doesn't make sense to me because there's so many times where I listen to stuff on different speeds depending. It always depends on the book narrator because some of them read slower than others. Some of them read super fast and you wouldn't be getting any information put on double speed. But there's actually been some of my favorite books that I have read on double speed on Audible, which some people say it's too fast and you're not getting anything. But I mean, I was enjoying my reading and got the story. So it's not a problem for me.
Right.
But there's some where it's like, okay, 1.5 definitely is too slow for me for whatever the narrator's doing. And then I'll put it on double speed and it's like, nope, that's way too much. And there's just no option for the middle. And I was just wondering like if there was some sort of reason why that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm pretty sure I usually don't. Well, no, that's not true. I do frequently go past. I don't go all the way up to 2, but
I don't on many, but I have before.
So Overcasts has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is 5 sections in between 1 and 2.
Mm.
And so
I would never listen to a podcast itself on faster speed because to me, that's people talking like it's in. Like, I don't know. It just feels different. I know you can make an argument that it's not, but like, I feel like I would never want to put people talking on a faster speed because to me, it's about the inflection of their voice, not just listening to the story.
I definitely was like that before. Then smart speed, like, kind of got me into it a little bit. And then I've started increasing what I listen to. And the only way to do that is to like shrink the time it takes to listen to things. And so I've kind of slowly bumped it up. And like, at least with Overcast, you can have different settings for different shows. And so depending on what the show is, I have different speeds that I bump up to.
I think I have the opposite problem than you because what'll happen with me is I'll find a show I really like because of the way I can listen to stuff at work. I'll get through all of it quick. Yeah. And so I actually want it to last as long as possible. That might be part of it as well. But
that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just different for me. Do you want to move on to a topic? I feel like we're spending a lot of time on this.
Yeah, we can. I love talking about apps and technology. So
I do too. But I feel like I'm kind of like probably unwarranted, but also subconscious of does anybody else want to sit and listen to
this?
That's
true.
I mean, fine talking about it too. But
no. Let's move on.
So there's a lot of big news in the Tolkien world.
Yes.
As of late, both in the book department and in the media department.
Okay, I'm only familiar with the book one that we were texting about earlier this morning.
Okay. I'm sure you'll actually be familiar with the latter. You just don't realize it yet. Okay. But so you texted me this article that said, like, oh, there's a new J.R.R. Tolkien book coming out. Like, his son has been, you know, over the years releasing, like, rounding things out or releasing unfinished things.
Based on his notes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what's really funny about that is I always read that as his son is doing this thing. And I have a very particular mental image of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I read that article, it was like, Tolkien's son, who is 93.
Yeah, he's old.
Is doing blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa. I mean, it makes sense, but.
Some people criticize, which I think you'll get this at any time something's published after an author's death. Some people criticize that, like, he's just milking everything, you know, just releasing anything he can. But
if that were the case, it wouldn't have taken him this long.
No, but I will say, I feel like he's pretty respectful with the stuff that he's released, like the Silmarillion itself, which is now considered, like, you read The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings, and the Silmarillion. Yeah, if you're beloved. Hardcore, like, it's that was the first thing he released. Like after his father's death, that he, like,
and that one seems like it makes the most sense in terms of,
yeah,
things based on his father's notes, because that's like sort right. of a historic.
Yeah, like, it reads book. Like a fictional history.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not a narrative. So it makes sense. Like,
no,
if there's a whole section missing, oh well. Like, it's not like, yeah, it's that exactly. big of a deal.
Yeah, so he so basically from the Silmarillion, there's these three short chapters that span throughout the book that have a little bit more narrative drive to them, but they're not full fleshed out things. So I mean, they read like a history of the event. And there was three stories in there that Christopher Tolkien said. I forget. It's in a preface to one of these books.
Christopher Tolkien is his son, I'm assuming, right?
Right, right. And he said that there were these three stories were ones that his father had planned on eventually expanding on into novels and had made many attempts on all three of them. And so the first one that came out, to my knowledge, kind of in this set was The Children of Hurin, which is actually like, it's fantastic. Like,
oh, okay. I have not read that.
Yeah, it's very good. Like, this is, yeah, that's why I wanted to kind of mention it on here, because it's easier than texting about it. But Children of Hurin is actually, that came out years ago, and it's very good. And there's kind of like an introductory chapter from Christopher Tolkien that feels kind of notesy, but once it gets into the narrative, it's straight through. It's just a clean narrative. It reads more like a legend. It's not going to be like The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings, but it does read like with dialogue, you know, different chapters, all that sort of thing. So it reads like a story, and it's very, I liked it quite a bit. The next one that he released was something, I think the other one was like, it's called like Beren and Lúthien or something like that. And I never read that one because I picked it up in the store and was going to purchase it thinking, oh, this is the next one. This is like, this will be like Children of Hurin, and just started like flipping through it. And it was like large sections of text that was finished by J.R.R. Tolkien. But like in between those texts, you'd see in like a thinner column, just like pages of notes and or like editorial notes on like, this is what's supposed to be filling in this gap here, this break in the narrative.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. And so basically, so to me, if Christopher Tolkien can write, which he can, because he finished a couple things here and there in Children of Hurin seamlessly, I couldn't tell whose writing,
right.
But it was like 90% J.R.R. Tolkien and the rest of it was the son type of thing. If he can do that, just do that.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he kind of considered it being, I guess he probably, his philosophy was he was being over, there's like a limit to how much he'll do that. And so he considered it crossing some sort of line. And so he just presented it as was with his,
it wasn't editorial. It was,
yeah,
actual creation. And that was like the boundary in his head or something, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. He didn't want to be accused of that thing that some people,
I can see that, because you can imagine, yeah, the flip right. side where people would freak out at
absolutely.
Him if he altered the, you know, the pure work of J.R.R. Tolkien.
Right. Yeah. And there was a couple other books that are not Middle Earth related that he's also released like that as well. And so all of that to say, those aren't bad. Like, they're actually like, it looks like an incredible like feat that he pulled off, like just digging through scraps and piecing together in order, even the notes into a sequential, like complete picture. Mm-hmm. It's definitely, it's something worth reading, but not for the lay reader. Like, I don't feel like reading those. Like, I read J.R.R. Tolkien because I want fantasy stories that are really well written. But obviously, like, scholars of Tolkien or just writing in general would probably love that sort of stuff. But because there's people that do that. Like, you go read old, like one of the things he released was like a reworking of like an old like Norse poem, and it's like a full book.
Didn't he do Beowulf?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was.
A and translation of Beowulf or something.
Right. Yeah, but it was like his own reworking. So it was something that he actually wrote technically as an original thing. Okay. Like, he rewrote. Yeah. And
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Again, I didn't read it. But yeah, it's either that or, and there's another one called like Sigurd and Gudrun, and that's like a German myth or something like that. Yeah.
Wasn't Beowulf in, was it in Old English or was it in German?
I'm confused about that because it's a Norse thing.
Okay.
It's like a Viking thing. I have read it.
For some reason, I thought it was in Old English. And like, it was one of those weird examples of a thing that's in, quote, English that nobody now would be able to read. Not that nobody can read, but like,
I'm honestly English not sure.
Let's see.
I got the feeling that it was a Norse myth that was an English work. So the work of Beowulf, I think, is an English work, but I think like the tale is a Norse thing.
So it is an Old English epic poem.
Yeah.
And it is a poem set in Scandinavia.
Yes. Yeah. So that would be Norse like related.
Yeah. So I guess it's like an English work based on Norse mythology, I guess.
Yep. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. That's what I was saying. Yeah. And
produced between 975 and 1025. It's a while ago.
Yeah. It's old. It's really quick read. Like, it's not some big, long, drawn out thing. It's pretty straightforward. There's that one version by the translator that's like the most famous one that like colleges always have you buy. I read that, and it was like, I think on Audible, it was like 2.5 hours at best. Like, that's including like introduction and everything. It's a pretty short story. So if you ever want to read like an old story, it's a pretty quick read. All of this to say, yeah, so he's got this third book coming out called The Fall of Gondolin, which was supposed to be this third tale that he wanted to novelize. And all I was simply telling you was like, if it's like Children of Hurin, I'm all for it. I would be very excited for that. But I'm going to wait until I see it in the store and can hold it in my hand and flip through it and see, like, is this piecemeal like the Beren and Luthien one or whatever that other one was? Or is it going to be like an actual narrative that I can sit and read?
Right.
Because if it's the latter, I'm all for it. So, but for people that are super Tolkien fans, it's good news regardless. So,
yeah, no, that's definitely cool whenever stuff like that comes out even this late.
Right. Right. I'm also wondering, like, if it has anything to do with this next piece of Tolkien news. Probably not. But so the other big thing is you're peripherally aware of the Amazon purchasing rights to doing some sort of Middle Earth show, correct?
Yeah, they bought the rights to Lord of the Rings, correct? But they were saying that they weren't planning on adapting the Lord of the Rings books, but some sort of in the Middle Earth world series.
And from what I understand, even though concrete stuff is not out for it yet, it is going to be considered part of like the cinematic universe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So so that all excites me because I'm really hoping they don't tie into any characters in Lord of the Rings.
So I was wondering, are the VFX de-aging artists going to have to work their magic on what's his face again?
I feel like they would be stupid to try and do that because like having that sandbox to play in opens up so many opportunities, both in actual fictitious histories or just doing your own thing.
Right. It is a complete open world to play with.
That's what made me mad about the show Gotham, which admittedly is on a much minor scale than what Amazon has done. But that's what made me mad about that was like, I was like, oh, you have Gotham City. You can do whatever you want to. Gang wars, all this stuff. And they're like, let's try and get as close to Batman as we can without actually. Right.
We're not going to have Batman, but we're going to just dance around it because anytime we right. can tease an episode as having a Batman moment, those are the ones that do well.
Right. Yeah.
Same with, was it Supergirl? Apparently Superman has been in Supergirl.
Right.
Like 40 times. And every time it's like a big deal or something because that's who right. sells Supergirl.
Exactly. Yeah. And so all of that to say, like, I'm hoping that what they do is smart and that they'll just sort of, you know, play in a sandbox, like do their own thing. But the big news, which I imagine you saw this, but I'm surprised if you haven't. The big thing was this is now, as far as the budget goes, the most expensive television show to date.
Oh, no, I have not heard that.
Like I'm not sure if they ordered or if they plan on 5 seasons at a price tag of $1 billion. So that's $200 million per season.
Now, how does that compare?
Well, like the only other thing I can think of is like, I know Game of Thrones is pretty expensive. I feel like even that show, I we could look it up, but that's not what we're here to do. So I'm going to take a stab in the dark and say I'm pretty sure I read one time that they do like as of the newest seasons, which are the most like effects heavy seasons. I think they do like $100 million a season. And so
that's substantially
double.
Different.
Yeah, that's if that number is correct, that's double what Game of Thrones does, which is already a pretty expensive show. So it's interesting because that's sort of exciting because as someone who likes Lord of the Rings, you're like, oh, good. They're going to maybe put a lot of quality into this. But it's also sort of nerve wracking because the headline most expensive show ever, that has to succeed. It can't not get. It can't even get like a stable amount and like a vaguely stable amount and keep going. Like it has to.
They're certainly not dipping their toes in it.
Right.
It's a giant investment.
Right.
So I just a quick Google search here shows that like so the standard for super expensive episode is $10 million.
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones, the final 6 episodes of Game of Thrones cost $15 million a piece.
Yeah.
So I don't know how many episodes there are.
Yeah, that's about what I was saying. It's like they do 10 episode seasons normally, and these last two was 7, and then I guess what you said, 6 remaining. So they keep within that budget of 100.
So Amazon's thing is 1 billion into at least 5 seasons.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the math is on that, but
200 million
per season.
Yeah.
Right. And then depending on how many episodes, obviously, that's still substantially more, it seems, than anything
yeah,
else.
Yeah, it's quite a price tag.
Now, I wonder how much of that billion is going into marketing.
True. I'm also wondering, like, if they're working with Peter Jackson's lot in New Zealand, like, for that stuff.
Well, so according to this article, they're potentially hiring Peter Jackson to produce it.
That's great. Like that, yeah. That I feel like if you're going to try and make it feel like it's part of the movie universe, that you have to do that.
Especially like, I don't know what Amazon's track record is, but I know like Netflix and to some extent Hulu apparently are kind of known for being in the stage right now where they're throwing money at creative people and then like telling them to do their thing. Because a failure in their world is a lot less of a failure than it is in the traditional world. Because like, it's not all based on box office. It's like word of mouth and having an extensive catalog.
That's true.
And like a sleeper hit can be just as important, if not more important, than a big front heavy series coming out for these like streaming services.
Yeah, like there's going to be like a lot of, whether or not it's a flop, there's going to be a lot of fanfare around this premiering.
Yeah, what I meant by that though is like if they pull Peter Jackson in,
right,
they might give him a little bit more leeway than maybe he got with The Hobbit. And I don't know how much was Peter Jackson and how much was the, you know, producers or who it was that caused some of the stuff with The Hobbit to go down. But either way, he's clearly good at what he does.
The Hobbit had a long storied history, like Del Toro. A lot of those influences were left over from stuff Del Toro was originally doing.
Okay.
So it actually also explains why the wargs and the Hobbit looked more like wolves and not like from the Lord of the Rings, because that was the designs they originally redrew, because people were actually starting to get frustrated at Del Toro because he's big on design, but people are like, but this is connected to the other movies. You can't just change the look of a thing.
Right.
But anyways, so there were some things they kept from Del Toro's stuff.
Interesting.
And anyways.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know all of it. I just knew some of that stuff was like why certain things looked a little different was because that was Del Toro's design that kind of stuck with the production. Hmm. But anyways. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I'm kind of curious, like, as you as someone who's, like, sort of mildly a fantasy fan, could take it or leave it, like, what is your preliminary, like, guesses at how this will go down? Are you excited? Do you think?
I'm excited in part because it's the Lord of the Rings. That implies in my head a certain tone. Like,
yeah,
that makes me excited because I am not against Game of Thrones. And there's a part of me that's very interested in watching it.
Yeah. It'll be stressful for you.
There's two big things. One is I don't have HBO and I don't want to pirate it. So like,
right.
I'm not going to pay per episode for something when I have a legion of streaming services at my disposal that keep pumping out way more good content than I could possibly consume.
Right.
And then the other thing is like, I get frustrated at the, unfamily friendliness of certain things.
Oh yeah, it's not, and I get that. It's not something
this isn't a judgment on people who watch it. Like there's plenty of stuff that is worth that to me. It's just I'm not enough into it to make it worth going that deep into it or dealing with those issues.
To me, I honestly feel like you would change your mind once you started watching just the first couple episodes, but I understand the hesitancy because there's a lot of stuff I'm like that about, and then whenever I actually sit down and start watching, I'm like, holy cow, like what why did I have this conception of it?
Like an example would be like House of Cards is probably just as bad.
Yeah.
Maybe not just as bad, but you know, it's in a similar category. It's also like even darker. Yeah. And has worse stuff in it, but it was worth it for me at first. But as soon as the quality started to falter, it was like no longer worth the sort of guilty feeling I have watching it to keep pushing through. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get that.
It's a weird thing, but you know.
It's not something I personally have qualms with, but I understand others do. So like I get that.
So all that said, because it's Lord of the Rings, I hope that maybe some of that gets maybe toned down a little bit.
My only worry with this, well, I'll say two. I already mentioned one of them, and it was just I don't want them to try and shoehorn in fan service-y stuff.
Yes, right.
But with that said, if they don't do that, barring that, my only other worry is that there's early whispers that they're just doing this to compete with Game of Thrones, which doesn't really make much sense because Game of Thrones is ending.
I mean, it makes complete sense because it's a gigantic smash hit.
Yeah, but I was going to say, but it's like a big, they're like, hey, Game of Thrones has succeeded with this big fantasy thing. Why don't we do that and just get something that already has brand recognition? And so I get that, and that there probably is some of that behind the execs that are working on it.
No doubt. That is the biggest reason.
Yeah.
Unquestionably.
But I'm also, I am also hoping, I was talking about the direct competition part.
I know. I'm saying that's exactly the reason.
What I'm saying is direct competition, they won't exist in this at the same time is what I'm saying. I wasn't talking about the reasoning behind it. I was talking about the competition between the two. One's ending 2 years later, the next one will start.
Gotcha.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, it's like I hope that the creative forces behind it, which is certainly very likely impossible, are regardless of the people writing the checks reasons behind it. I hope that the creative forces actually making the product like put a lot into it, and they're not just trying to make some sort of political pot boiler gratuitous fantasy thing out of Lord of the Rings.
I see what you're saying. You don't want it to be like Game of Thrones.
Like I want it to be Lord of the Rings.
Right.
Like honestly, I want it to be PG-13. I mean I like Game of Thrones. I like that if it were a movie, it'd be a hard R, but and I like that about it. It's got its own atmosphere.
But that doesn't feel right for this material.
Yeah, I don't want it to be that for the Middle Earth.
Yeah.
Like I want
I'm with you.
Would be like if someone's like, I'm gonna make a gritty version of the Chronicles of Narnia. I don't need that. Like there's plenty of fantasy that's gritty and dark out there, and I like it, and it has its place, but this is not the property to do that with.
Right.
So,
although the only thing that would maybe be worse is if they go with the tone it down to appease people, but then still try to make it like dark and gritty in the same way.
Yeah.
Not that Lord of the Rings isn't dark and gritty, because it obviously is.
This might be a weird... this might be a weird parallel, but it's kind of what frustrates me about like the Ninja Turtle movies. Like, I never really got past the first one for many reasons, but one of which is like, and it's the same with Transformers, honestly, but I get that people like the first one, it's all jokey and everything. But to me, one of the things that frustrated me is not that it had inappropriate humor in it, because I like comedies that have...
Are you talking about the new Michael Bay ones or the 90s ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I'm talking about like that and the Ninja Turtle, like the new Ninja Turtle ones. Yeah. Like, it's just like, these are things that I grew up with, and it's weird mashing the adult content with something for 7-year-olds. It's almost like you're aware your audience are now 40-year-olds that grew up with this stuff, and so you're just making it for them, but it's also for kids, and it's like this weird...
It's like Ready Player One.
Well, yeah, Ready Player One was different because that was made as is.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm joking.
but yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is it's like you're taking these, like, you're taking something that for all its history, its intent and its creation was meant to be for kids, and you're turning it into something, even if it's entertaining. Like that's the thing, is like, I don't really think much about the Transformers or Ninja Turtle movies, but I understand why, like, someone that just wants to sit down and watch a mindless action movie would like them. Mm-hmm. But it still kind of irritates me that it's like, this is for 7-year-olds, and you're making like inappropriate jokes and having very like sexual references, and clearly, like, anyways, my whole point being is like, I just feel like that sort of stuff irritates me whenever the property's original origins wasn't really that thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's exceptions to the rule that I'm not thinking of right now off the top of my head, but
I think comic books are an exception. Right. Like, Batman was originally created for kids, but when it has, through its long life, gone down dark, gritty routes, and those have been great.
But that's also a situation where the source material itself has dictated that.
Well, sure, but the source material is based on other source material.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, for instance, Lord of the Rings, then the Middle Earth stuff has never gone into like Game of Thrones territory. Right, right. It just hasn't. Yeah. It has its dark moments. Even some of the history stuff can be kind of violent, but it's always had like a different tone than something like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's certainly violent, but not like gratuitous violence.
Right.
Or at least it never came across that way.
Well, it's not even that. It's just like, Game of Thrones has this like hyper realistic, like, hopelessness to it. And that's kind of the feel of it.
And that's like the opposite of Lord of the Rings.
Right. Because that's the thing, is it's like, even Game of Thrones, for all the flack it gets, it really isn't. You can go many, many episodes and many hours of watching that show without violence or without sexual content. But I mean, it is obviously there. I'm more talking about just the overall product. It's just different.
Gotcha.
And like, it's just more adult in its themes. Like, Lord of the Rings isn't dealing with politics. It's not a political potboiler.
Yeah, yeah.
Of medieval politics. Right. It's like a very different feel to it. And part of that is its PG-13 status kind of feeling. Anyways, so all of that kind of got out of hand, but it is interesting. I am looking forward to it, hoping for the best.
Sweet. Is that all the Lord of the Rings news or Tolkien news?
It's all the Tolkien news I have for today. That's our Tolkien corner.
Tolkien corner. I like that. I don't think there's a lot of movement in Tolkien corner.
No, there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for Tolkien corner.
We'll wait another 4 decades for another book to come out, and
when Christopher Tolkien's daughter is, you know, publishing,
she's publishing
something.
The notes of Christopher Tolkien's notes of
even though I disagree with the cynicism, I did think this joke was funny. Someone like posted on that announcement, because like, it was on Facebook too, and someone posted on it, coming next year, Christopher Tolkien publishes his dad's shopping list. anyways. So these next two topics are kind of conjoined, just basically spun off like two shows that I started watching recently. But the first one is I really got into The Crown recently.
I don't remember. Did I recommend that to you?
Oh, yeah, many people have, but yes, you have as well. It's been in my queue on Netflix for a while, and I never really got around to watching it. And then, on Easter, I wasn't sick, but I kind of had a headache. And after we did the whole, you know, lunch at grandma's thing, I just went home and just wanted to lay down and watch some movies. And so I was like flipping through the movies, and then I was like, I want to watch something. I don't know if you get in moods like this, but I was like, I want to watch something medieval.
Okay.
Or like something around that time.
I get in moods like that, but usually not medieval, but same concept.
Yeah. And so there were two movies on Netflix that I watched one after another because they were the only things on there, but I'm not embarrassed by them because they were actually very good movies. Was Marie Antoinette and then The Duchess, which are, I didn't realize even watching these, but they are movies that take place historically at the exact same time, but in different parts of the world, one in France and one in England. Yeah. So it was very interesting. And The Duchess actually was a better movie and made me very frustrated and stressed out because it was just horrible. But anyways, all of that to say, like, I watched both of these movies that are about like the French Revolution. You know, Marie Antoinette got her head cut off at whenever the French Revolution kicked into gear, and they, yeah. And then The Duchess is about someone who was also a real person who was in England, was married off to this guy who was in a high up position in the government, and he just treated her awful. It was horrible. But anyways, and so after I got done watching these movies, I was like, I want to watch something else about like royalty for now, because like
once you get in one of these moods, you keep finding new things.
Yeah. And so I was like, you know what? There is just 20 hours of that sitting on Netflix right now. And granted, it's a little bit later. It's in, you know, post World War II, but it's like kind of still dealing with similar type things. And so,
well, and it's dealing with the sort of transition to modern Western life, which is a super fascinating like concept. And the fact that there's a single person who you can trace through all of that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah. And watching it, though, the one question I keep having, which I mentioned to you before, is like, I'm like really fascinated with it. Like, I genuinely love the show, and it's probably one of my favorite shows that I've seen in a long time. But I keep like thinking, what do they do? Like, what are their what are their responsibilities? Like, they even make it a point in the show to continually say, like, your duty is to not say anything. And they'll even say, like, my duty is to know when to be silent. And it's like, you're just coming up with fancy ways to say you're not doing anything. Like, don't get me wrong, the drama amongst like the staff and like, you know, but the tensions between the queen and her husband and
dealing with controversies and
yeah, Prince Philip, like all that stuff is really interesting. And then I'm just like, I don't know what you're doing, though. Like, it is just sort of like ceremony. You do charity stuff, you know, your representatives. I mean, so you can make an argument that there's like a big deal about them representing the state. And I get that.
Well, especially at the beginning when they are still sort of maintaining the colony.
Yeah. And then I did mention this to you as well. Like, there was that giant bomb of like, oh, yeah. And if they decide in Parliament that the prime minister is not confident for his job and they make a vote of no confidence, you can replace him. And I just remember thinking, like, that's a huge power.
Yeah.
Like, that's enormous. Like, what are...
Wait. Say that again.
And so, in like, I think it's like the third or fourth episode of the first season, a lot of the same people that put Winston Churchill into power to be reelected prime minister, they were getting kind of ticked off with him for various reasons, but also I think this was either right before or right after the fog thing happened, which was also interesting on its own.
Very. I was not familiar with that story. I'd heard of it, whatever the name was.
Yeah, I didn't even know it existed. Yeah. And so they were talking and they were saying, like, we are going to push for a vote of no confidence. It ended up not happening, but apparently, I guess, again, something I don't completely understand the process of, but in English parliamentary procedure, you can make a vote for no confidence. And I guess a certain majority can say the prime minister is unfit for office. And they mentioned.
Yeah, but I didn't think that the current king or queen got to just choose.
I didn't think so either. But they said that, like, they said something.
They replace. They replace prime ministers somewhat frequently, right?
Right. But well, what had happened was, and maybe this is something that's not allowed anymore that was applicable at the time, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I was trying to figure out, because someone came to her and was like, blah, 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 we're vote of no confidence and you can influence, and because you're allowed to replace him. And she was like, but that wouldn't that be a constitutional crisis? Like the implication and how they set up the dialogue was she actually is allowed to do that, but in principle is not going to.
So I just Googled it, and it says, like, can the Queen fire the British Prime Minister is what the first answer.
No, that's not what I was saying.
That's the first thing that came up.
Gotcha.
And it says in the real world, the answer is no, since the introduction of the Fixed Term Parliaments Act of 2011.
Oh, yeah, so that's recent.
So apparently before 2011, the Queen could practically fire the British Prime Minister. But
yeah,
then, and keep in mind, this is a Quora answer, so I don't know how accurate this is.
Right.
But then it says, in the political science sense, the answer is yes. Her Majesty could invoke her own royal prerogative, so suspend. Oh, she can suspend any law she wishes.
Oh, wow.
So technically, they have the power to suspend any law.
That's really weird. I feel like it's something that's just like held in balance by the fact that they know that if the royalty actually ever did do something like that, they would just go, okay, we're done with the royalty.
Yeah, exactly.
It's sort of like it's implied but never used sort of thing.
Interesting.
Which is still really weird, but
I mean, it's a weird situation that they've held on to royalty for so long, and now I feel like she has successfully transferred that into a symbolic role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like, you know, whenever her dad was king, it was clearly like an important role in the like way government worked, or at least it appeared to be.
Yeah.
And then her tenure has been like successfully retaining the royal crown while slowly whittling down its power, which I don't know if that's actually technically true, but in my mind, it seems like that's been the case.
Yeah.
And now it feels like royalty in the UK could continue forever as sort of a fun symbolic quirk forever.
Yeah, I get that. But I also understand the British people. Well, I've heard some British people both say, I think it's a great thing because, you know, like they do like the knighthoods of the arts and different stuff like that. And
it's fun.
And I've seen other people be like, it's ridiculous. It's nonsense that we're like upholding a like monarchical structure.
There's definitely no argument against that other than it's fun.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Is it like it seems.
Have you ever seen CGP Grey's video on does the royal family cost the UK money?
Oh, no.
It's like this weird, really bizarre thing where, like, depending on how you do the math, British royalty costs the UK like this enormous amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, in truth, the royal family like lends all of its land to the government.
Oh, okay.
And then the government makes all this money off of them from like tourist stuff.
Yeah.
And like that way surpasses the money that British taxes pay towards the royal family.
That's interesting.
This is from a long time ago that I've seen it. I'll link it in the show notes, but like it's definitely worth watching because it's just one of those classic CGP Grey videos where he describes a really bizarre, complex system and talks about all of its weird, funny quirks.
I will say, like, I feel like as far as the show goes, I think that what's appealing about it is it reminds me a lot of ways in Mad Men, because Mad Men, there's really not a lot of consequence that's really going on in the show. Nothing. You're simply following these people through their lives as businessmen and wanting to find out what happens to them in the very strictest sense. And they're there as a window into the events of the time.
Right. It's like a window into that world.
Yeah. And so, like, to me, I feel like that's what's appealing about The Crown is, as a TV show, is like, it's not that there's never anything of consequence going on, but it's like a nice like window into really big moments in history, which I was surprised they started post World War II. But there's definitely plenty of interesting things that are going to happen along the way.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. If it's going to be about the Queen, that's when it makes sense.
Well, right. But I'm just saying it's called The Crown. You could have just because the other thing that I heard is that their plan for the show is every two or three seasons changing the actors and doing a different period of her reign.
Yeah, I think either season three or the next one is going to switch over to a new actress.
Yeah, I know they already recast like Prince Philip or whatever with a guy from Game of Thrones who's pretty good. But yeah, all of that to say, like they could have started, you know, with the king as well and then moved into her. But I mean, it makes sense that they start with one person and go through that too, so I get it. But I'm not criticizing at all either. I was just saying it was interesting that they started right at the end of World War II, and but there's a lot of interesting stuff that's going to happen. I'm hoping that they touch on, so it'll be interesting. And it was also interesting to realize, like, I didn't put it together until I started watching the show, and I was like, oh, this is the guy that the movie The King's Speech was about.
Yeah,
and like things like that where you're like, oh, this is who this person is, this is who this person is, and I know who all these people are now, and I didn't think I knew anything about them before that.
Yeah, I've definitely enjoyed sort of getting to understand the like the different players in those different areas through sort of all these different movies.
Yeah. And I will say the one thing about the whole royalty situation that sort of it does make me mad is like how they treated the king that abdicated.
Oh, or yeah, yeah,
whatever
yeah.
That situation. Like that just makes me so mad, because that is the because everything is fine until you treat someone like that on the basis of something that's pure ceremony.
Well, and sort of the way that they treated her sister too. I don't remember the details. Like she may have made mistakes.
I'm trying to remember.
I don't know how far you are either. I guess I shouldn't say that. But
I am on episode 9 of season 1, so I'm not completely.
I don't know.
Both seasons.
But either way, like I think throughout the whole thing, it's like,
oh, there is some of what you're talking about. Yeah,
the fact that like,
anyways,
you just sort of have to like upend people's lives for the sake of maintaining this sort of this fake thing. You know, like none of it means anything really. But it does.
But that's the thing is like it does and it doesn't.
Yeah. As you know, two Americans who I think we spent a couple episodes talking about how neither of us really gets that into symbols. We're probably not people that can really talk about it and truly understand it.
Yeah. Well, I was that's what I was going to get at. Like to me personally, I feel really like I feel a lot of cognitive dissonance because I'm the type that doesn't give a crap about just presumed authority for no real reason. But for some reason, like it is interesting. Like I get why people are interested in the whole royalty thing. And I do think it's kind of funny that a lot of like British people I've heard, I don't know if this is true, but they'll say like, you Americans are more interested in that than we are. And like, I hear that a lot.
I mean, I'm sure like there's a degree of that that's true, especially for an expat.
Right.
'Cause if you're a British person coming to America and any news reaches you about royalty, everybody you know is going to be talking to you about it, because they're gonna be like, oh, did you hear about the royal family? So from their perspective, every American is just endlessly fascinated with the royal family.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's not like we talk about it that much.
Right. But yeah, so I'm watching that. I'm excited, and nice. I'm glad I caught it at a time where season 3 will probably drop soon.
I think season 2 came out in like December, so you might have a little bit of a wait.
Oh, that's too bad.
And we have quite a bit of British listeners, so you know, any of you want to tell us your thoughts on the royal family, whether it should stay or go, or your thoughts on any different TV shows, or if you just want to fill Dan's feed with shows he should watch about different royalty.
Well, right now I started another show as well that I'm watching with The Crown, and I thought I would be embarrassed to say this, but I'm honestly not. I think Gilmore Girls is one of the best shows I've ever seen.
It makes me extremely happy to hear you say that. That was the one on the list that I was excited about.
Are you guys Gil heads too?
I don't know if I would go quite that far. Now, admittedly, I have not sat down and watched through it from beginning to end myself, but it was one of those shows that my wife started, and like usually what happens is she'll start watching a show, but like her watching a show usually means I'm kind of watching it and I'm working on, you know, my computer or whatever. and it's in the background. And pretty quickly, I realized that that show was way more special than the sort of
all
like,
it is like the writing is just it's, better.
Well, it's not just the writing. This is going to be annoying to hear me always say, but like the cinematography in that show is excellent.
Is it?
Yeah. Like just pay attention sometime. Maybe don't if you don't care, but like there's so many like elaborate shots in that show.
That's true. I will say there was like, you know, like what is it like? What am I? Not pulley shot, a dolly shot. There's like there's things that are there's a lot of like walk and talks.
Yes, it's full of these like very creative long takes. And that combined with the like extremely punchy, witty, fast dialogue of that show.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say is like to me, I get more the writing side of it. And it's not that like, cause there's a lot of cliches on it, but to me, like it felt like a really well done show version of like those old, like rom-com, like comedies that people really like, what is it? Father of the Bride. Is that the one?
Yeah.
With?
Yeah. That's a great one.
Like you have like a quirky French guy and like, you know, like things like it's that, like the crazy cook and you know, things like that. But it's done at like on a show pace, but it's still like the dialogue and everything. It felt like an elevated CW show, which is where it started.
Yeah. It's like an Aaron Sorkin written like TV drama or daytime drama.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. Like, okay. So I was always told like, oh, it's not a girly show. It's for everybody. And I will say this, it's definitely more kind of leaning towards probably it for guys that are worried about that. It might be a little bit of a girly show, but it really shouldn't be a problem.
It's in the romantic drama category for sure.
Yeah. But I will say this, what's interesting about it is like, it's very like, if this started in 99, which is when I think the first season aired, it's surprisingly progressive for what I feel like was on TV around. I mean, a lot of stuff started pushing the envelope around that time as far as like subject matters and stuff like that. I mean, and it's just like very interesting show. Like to give you an example of what a problem I have. I got all my homework done on Friday last week. And so for once on Sunday, I didn't have homework that I had to work on. And so I did things on Sunday, but somehow between Sunday and today, I'm on episode 17, I think.
It is one of those shows that you just keep going.
Yeah, it's just easy to just sit and watch if you're not doing anything. Yeah. I put it on in the morning, like while I'm making breakfast and stuff. And
now that the lead writer of that show, I cannot remember what her name was.
Paladino.
Yeah, yeah. She's the one that's doing the Marvelous Miss Maisel that's on Amazon right now.
That makes sense.
Did you ever watch that?
I have not yet because I wanted to finish this first.
Okay. I've definitely recommended that one to you, I think. That show is fantastic.
Well, part of it is also like there's a podcaster that I like that he did a podcast called Gilmore Guys where they just go through every episode. So I started watching the show to see if like honestly more for the podcast, but then I got hooked on the show and after they finished all of the Gilmore Girls, they did the Miss Maisel show and it makes sense. That's why they moved on to that. So
yeah, that show, yeah. I mean, it is an Amazon show and it's definitely on the like raunchier end of things, but it is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And it's like a period piece. It's in the 50s, I think, in New York. And so that aspect of it is also really great. So yeah, definitely recommend that one.
Yeah. I have a lot of TV to watch.
We have another patron corner we got to get to.
Yeah, you said you were going to spring this on me.
Yeah.
because I have not done any of the research I was supposed to do for this. And so I'm interested in why we're doing this now.
Yeah, well, okay. So the first patron sponsored segment, we did the whole episode. It was a couple episodes ago, right? Where we went through The Walking Dead. And we have some other ones that we're already kind of prepping for.
Right.
And those required some work on our end. But our second patron, Chad, who I know and you don't know, you've never met or anything, right?
No.
I was talking to him about it and I was like, hey, we need your topic. And he seemed like he was kind of stressing about it a little bit. He couldn't come up with anything and he kept saying like, I don't think that I can come up with anything that'll be interesting. And so I told him, just come up with something silly and something that you think might be hard to make a conversation about. And then it's sort of like a challenge, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking in my head, like, oh, I couldn't think of anything that wouldn't make for an interesting conversation. So I think we can handle anything. And then the other day, I walked over and started talking to him. He's like, hey, so I have the topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, what do you got? He's like, turtles.
Okay.
And I was like, what do you mean? Just like, just the animal turtles? Yeah, turtles. And
okay.
And I was like, all right, we'll do turtles.
Does he expect us to do like a long research, like data driven expose on turtles?
Yeah. So I bought a couple books, and I'm really, really deep into the research on turtles now. And so I want to tell you every fact about turtles that you could possibly imagine. No, so
Real quick, fun fact about turtles that I found out today in German class.
Are you completely serious right now?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. I don't know. Now, I will say this is a little bit of a letdown. I don't remember the actual word in German, like the phrase for turtle, but the translation directly into English is armored frog.
Ooh, armored frog.
Or like armored lizard. So literally they looked at it and they go, that is a lizard with a, well, I don't know why I'm doing a communist accent. I don't know what's doing a communist accent, but they look at it and they're like, that is a frog with a shield. So that is what that is.
There you go. So there's our Chad's corner. No.
Yeah. Welcome. Thanks, Chad.
There's not really that much. So I tried really quickly to just come up with, I came up with five things, rapid fire things that I'm going to fire at you and hope that one of them turns into a conversation.
Okay.
All right. So, and you already got one of them with the German translation for turtle. So really,
right,
we're already really deep into this. No. So did you ever have a pet turtle?
Did I ever have a pet turtle? No.
You never like got a turtle from the backyard, put it in a box for a couple days?
No.
Oh, okay. Well,
I have picked up a turtle before.
Wow.
I have held one in my hand.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You are a true man of nature.
Yep.
All right. So moving on.
Sorry. I got nothing.
What about turtle soup? You ever had turtle soup?
Nope.
Never had turtle soup?
Wow. You go from pet turtle to turtle soup.
Well, okay. Turtle soup's an interesting one because like apparently it used to be like a really big staple in like American diet.
Like, I'm sure it was.
Like Campbell's turtle soup was like a common turtle soup you'd get.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
See, this is all interesting.
Aren't there like, isn't there like some sort of, I know it's not really having anything to do with turtle, but like, what is it? Like turtle truffles? Like candy? Turtles? A turtle is attached to some sort of candy.
I think turtle truffles are these turtles that grow out of the ground under trees.
Yeah.
And pigs can find them.
And they inject their skin with chocolate. It's a horrifying process. It's really painful for the turtles, but it makes good candy.
This is gold. All right. Let's move on to, all right.
We also talked about the Ninja Turtles earlier.
Well, so that was the one I was expecting to be an interesting little conversation here. And then you kind of jumped the gun on me earlier. But
yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier that you were a watcher of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched all those like the three movies that came out in the 90s, late 80s, 90s.
So what do you think was the original form of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Because I didn't know this until I looked this up earlier.
What was the original form? Yeah,
where did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles come from?
They were like regular little turtles that were in the sewers of New York and like ooze came out and got onto them and it turned them and Splinter, who was a rat in the sewer, into like gigantic beings.
Sorry, not the origin story. I mean, what medium was the...
Oh, comic books.
Oh, okay. So you did know that. I did not realize that.
Yeah, I've even read there's a Roger Ebert
the critic
review for the first Ninja Turtle movie and talking about how like it just didn't come from comics to the movie form very well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the original comic was like a joke. It was a self-published parody of Daredevil, New Mutants, Cerebus, and Ronin.
I didn't know the specifics it was a parody of. I knew it was meant to be kind of a jokey comic.
Yeah, see, I did my research. And then I didn't, so I don't know the dates, but I'm guessing based on like around this time and what they did that that He-Man happened.
Yeah.
And then every toy company in the world wanted to make He-Man because Playmate Toys apparently decided they wanted to make an action figure and for some reason picked up this random comic and said, oh, that's going to be our thing. And then they, before they even started making action figures, found animators and made a show out of it.
Man, I had so many Ninja Turtle toys when I was little. Really? Like that and Mighty Ducks. Yeah.
I see. It's really weird. Like Ninja Turtles was something that I had almost no exposure to as a kid, except for one.
I think it was just because we had the movies. Because no, like my grandma would rent them, and then there was a cartoon show on Saturday morning, and so it was just kind of what we. It's the same reason Mighty Ducks. Mighty Ducks is kind of a similar thing, you know. It's just big humanoid ducks that play hockey and fight crime in the meantime,
right? Based on a TV show that was absolutely, or based on a movie that was absolutely nothing like that.
No. They literally took the concept and were like, but what if they were actually ducks?
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, my exposure mostly was that my cousin had the NES Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game, and that was awesome.
Mm.
So
I vaguely remember that. We never had an NES when we were little, but I know other people that did, and I feel like we played that. Like, we played like that, Killer Instinct, Mario, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so
what was your favorite of those three old movies? Did you ever watch any? You know, do you remember any?
I didn't watch them until I was older. Like, really.
Ah.
And we kind of watched them all. We may have watched them all in one night. I don't really remember. It's all like a blur, all of them together. And I remember them being fun.
I think I've only seen the first one once. Because what happened was my grandma had the second two that she bought for us to watch. And the third one was the one we probably watched the most. The second one was probably my favorite, and I think I only saw the first one once. All I remember is something like the first one got all Power Rangers-y at the end with like Shredder becoming as like big as a skyscraper and is really weird. I don't know.
That show needed to stay grounded to really stay true to its roots.
Right. In the dark, gritty sewers of New York City.
Yeah. To this day, though, New York pizza just means that like floppy pizza that they eat.
Yeah. And it just looks so good animated because there was always like cheese coming off the side. Yes.
Animated, it looked good. It did not look good in the movies, though.
No, but yeah, in the show, a cartoon, I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, Ninja Turtles, there's turtles.
Yep, there are turtles. The last thing I have is it wouldn't be an episode of A-Town if we didn't include a water tower.
Is a turtle and water tower?
There's a water tower. I'm going to send you a link here to water tower that has turtles on it.
All right.
I know how excited you get about this kind of stuff.
I'm going to look at it and I'll comment on it.
Please do. Paint us a word picture, Dan.
Tybee Island, Georgia water tower.
Yeah.
That is a flock of turtles at the bottom of a tower.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird move there.
Where is this at? Georgia?
Yeah.
Aren't those sea turtles? Why do they have...
I think those are sea turtles.
Why are those there? Georgia's not near the ocean, is it?
I believe it is.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, well, fair enough. They got sea turtles.
Yeah, I don't know why would you put something at the base of a water tower that has a big fence around it? Like,
yeah, I was going to say, wouldn't people be climbing all over that?
Yeah, it doesn't... It just seems like most people wouldn't see that.
Yeah.
But it is a water tower with turtles on it. So, you know.
There you go, Chad. Seriously, if you can come up with something that's a little more than turtley, then maybe we'll take a second shot. But this is all you get for now.
Oh, no. This is it. He used up his shot. He has to.
Will he get another round, like if he donates more or something?
Sure. Or we can always give the patrons just another round. We can solicit patron topics. I think
you get a second shot.
So I genuinely went, I was way overly confident in our ability to make a random topic interesting. And I was, I think I was okay, proven
but
right.
Like, normally people come up with interesting topics that they want to hear you guys talk about. Like it would be like if I listen to a movie podcast and they're like, yeah, you get to pick the movie. Like, they're going to talk about a movie, but it's not like, hey, let me try and find something that'll be difficult for you to discuss for more than 5 minutes.
That's true.
Like, it would be like, my topic is sponges.
That could be interesting, though. See, here's the thing.
Only if we could talk about SpongeBob SquarePants for an hour. But other than that.
But that's the thing. Well, the big thing, I think, is if it's a man-made thing, just the history of a thing is interesting in its own right, I think. But I was
patrons
like,
need to be clear that they're not buying research here.
Well, I think they might buy my research.
Maybe, but not me. I'm not committing to that. If you want to send us something and say, this is interesting, would you talk about it? Yes, as long as it's under 10
pages. I just
want to
say anything goes. And
okay,
we can turn anything into a topic, and it might be bad, and our listeners will just have to suffer through it.
Well, here's your 15-minute turtle section.
Yeah. No, this is, we've been talking for 12 hours on turtles, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to cut it down.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I think that's a good stopping point.
I think so.
Now that we've mastered turtles.
I'm sorry, Chad, that this was my fault. I told him to do a dumb topic, and that was a dumb topic.
It's pretty bad. All right.
You know what? This is going to go down. People are going to be like, oh, remember the turtle episode? Best one.
Yeah.
Yep. I think so.
Maybe. I really want some New York pizza now.
Yeah. Pizza would have been a good topic.
Yeah, it would have been a hell of a lot better than turtles. So if you want to argue with us about the turtles,
I want you guys to tell us your favorite kind of turtle. I know everybody has one.
Yeah, just got that loaded up.
Right. You've all been thinking this whole time. So go ahead and fire up the old Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah.
Or even Instagram. You could... Well, can you send people stuff on Instagram?
I think you can tag people. You can send messages to accounts. So
post a picture of a turtle on Instagram and tag A-Town FM.
Yeah.
However that works. That's what you should do. You think we'll get one?
At A-Town FM, r/A-Town FM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Post a picture of a turtle to our subreddit.
And if you aren't a patron and you want to have a wonderful episode like this turtle topic here, except you want a better one and you want a whole episode about it that we can actually talk about the topic, then feel free to become a patron. Or if you just like what we do, that can be found at Patreon at, and then I guess you search A-Town FM, correct?
Yeah, Patreon/A-Town FM, or okay, patreon.com/A-Town FM, or just go to our website and there's a patron tab.
Awesome. Sounds good.
And for real, I want to see your turtles.
And if you're listening on what's this, Overcast? I bet you that thing that like skips over the silences will just skip right over the turtle section. So no problems.
We'll have chapters. You can skip it.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Because Overcast supports chapters because it's amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. Send us your turtles. Yeah, we now know
they're vicious.
Pandas are...
They will bite you. Thank God they don't.